from bureaus worldwide, this is
FSN is what you mean, Ollie. Welcome to the program. How you doing? Thanks, Ollie. It's 3 minutes past the hour. Thursday it is, October 17th, 2019. It's been a pretty nice day here in Salford and Greater Manchester. Don't I just love to give you the weather reports, don't I? I've got two brilliant guests over the next 2 hours. Lots to talk about. Do tweet to the program right now. The Twitter handle hasn't ever changed. You know what it is. I look forward to hearing from you during the course of the next couple of hours.
Well, bring out the gimp.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, David Dubine will join the program in the second hour. He used to buy coffee in places as far away as Burma, or Myanmar, as they like to call it there. Used to be a full-scale, wholesale believer in the CO2 climate change story. But on his travels even, he was finding near the equator that cold weather damage, well, cold weather was damaging crops, and he began to look into this, and he began to find out about things like the Grand Solar Minimum. He runs a website called oilseedcrops.org, that's oilseedcrops.org even. He's got a hugely popular YouTube channel, and he makes a very interesting podcast as well. We'll talk about that with David Dubine in the second hour of the program. Before that, Eric Gizhevsky returns to the Richie Allen Show. He was on the program once before. Very interesting guy. Another hugely popular podcast creator. Eric, of course, is a traditional Catholic. You can find him at tradcatnight.org. Lots to talk about with him. Eric joins the program in about 25 minutes' time. Yeah, it's not been a bad week, and we're going to finish on a high, I think. That's it for... Well, it's not it. That's it in terms of the guests. Yeah, that's it. Goodbye. It was nice speaking with you, yeah. No. It's not April 1st. Well, have you been following the developments today, have you? Have you been following the developments? Because apparently a Brexit deal has been agreed between the UK and the European Union, and right now that deal is being put before the European leaders. So a deal has been agreed between the UK and the EU, and the EU27 leaders are now getting a chance to sign off on it. Yes, a Brexit deal! Hallelujah! 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 Right, well, is there cause for hallelujah? I don't know, we'll find out in a few minutes' time, eh? A Brexit deal! Did you hear that, Tom?
No. Could you repeat it? Because I can't believe my fucking ears.
A Brexit deal. Yeah. Well, I don't know. We'll hear from one or two people in a minute. Boris Johnson and Jean-Claude Juncker called it a very fair deal. And the European Union Commission president said that there was no need now to extend the Brexit deadline. He said, we have a deal, so why should we have a prolongation? We'll come back to that. So apparently this is great news for Boris Johnson and his government. But when this is put to the UK Parliament on Saturday, apparently he's going to struggle because the Democratic Unionist Party, they've said twice today, you might have heard Ollie Barrett on the news, that they will oppose it. Okay? Johnson says MPs must come together and get this excellent deal over the line. Except it's not an excellent deal. More on that in a minute. He said, now is the moment for us to get Brexit done. And then together work on building our future partnership, which I think positive for the UK and for the EU. Right. Here's Boris Johnson and Jean-Claude Juncker earlier in their little press conference.
And this deal means that there is no need for any kind of prolongation. And this is a fair, a balanced agreement. It is testament to our commitment to finding solutions. It provides certainty where Brexit creates uncertainty. It protects the rights of our citizens and it protects peace and stability on the island of Ireland.
I do think
that this deal represents a very good deal both for the EU and for the UK. And it's a reasonable, fair outcome and reflects the large amount of work that's been undertaken by both sides. And I agree very much, Jean-Claude, with what you said about protecting the peace process in the island of Ireland and in Northern Ireland. And, of course, for us in the UK, it means that we can deliver a real Brexit that achieves our objectives.
Right, Johnson and Juncker there. Of interest to you, maybe, as their brief press conference broke up, this made me laugh. Johnson says, thanks very much, you know, in the alpha male style. I'm having the last word. Thanks very much. And he moves to walk away, basically saying it's over, right? Basically saying it's over. But Jean-Claude Juncker wants the last word.
And we look forward to working with you in building that partnership in the weeks and months to come.
And off he
goes.
Thank
you all very much.
Hey. Pissed as a fart.
I have
Jean-Claude's the boss here. Yeah.
Jean-Claude is the boss here, eh? That's no small beer, that comment.
Yeah. I have to say that I'm happy about the deal, but I'm sad about Brexit.
Yeah, what is he, Simon? What is Jean-Claude Juncker?
The junkies bastard, yeah. The junkies bastard, yeah.
Exactly. That's Simon the Traveller there. Pissed out of his brains. But the salient point there was Boris Johnson saying, Jean-Claude is the boss. Of course he is. Anyway, the Democratic Unionist Party. Now, the government has relied on the DUP for support in key votes, even though it hasn't been worth, well, a bedpan of piss, really, because Theresa May couldn't get a deal through the House of Commons. Four times her deal was basically rejected. And Boris Johnson has lost every single vote in the House of Commons since he became Prime Minister. So the support of the DUP is not worth a bedpan of piss, I tells you. Right. So the DUP, they're saying they're not going to vote for this no matter what. They said the proposals are not beneficial to the economic well-being of Northern Ireland and they undermine the integrity of the union. That's what they said. They said also Saturday's vote in Parliament on the proposals will only be the start of a long process to get any withdrawal agreement bill through the House of Commons. So what is this deal then? Well, you won't be surprised to learn. By the way, I've been reading the text of this since it was published this afternoon. And this is something I do, and I'm able to do it. And I'm trying not to brag now, but this is my field, right? This is my bag. So let me tell you what it is. It's pretty much the same deal agreed by Theresa May last year. It is. This isn't a final deal, by the way. They're trying to give you all this crap on UK media. This is only the withdrawal agreement. This isn't any agreement on future trading relationships or anything like that at all. It's just a withdrawal agreement. That's all it is. And it's the bloody same as the one agreed with Terry May. The one that she couldn't get through the House of Commons. It's the same one, but worse. It's actually worse. Because it's laid out in this withdrawal agreement. The UK will continue to abide by European Union rules until New Year's Eve next year, but probably longer. They're allowing it to be vague in the text, possibly till 2023, to allow businesses to adjust. So we'll continue to be bound by EU rules for the next few years. We will pay an estimated £33 billion divorce bill. Right? Now, they've guaranteed the rights of European Union citizens living in the UK and the UK ones in Europe, but that's fair enough. That's what it should be. And the big thing here is that Northern Ireland will basically stay aligned to the European Union single market. And this is something Boris Johnson swore and Jacob Rees-Mogg swore again and again and again and again would not happen. They are saying that the backstop has been removed, but it's a nonsense, really. Northern Ireland will remain allegedly part of the UK's customs territory to allow it to be included in any future trade deals struck by this government. But it will remain an entry point into the European Union's customs zone. It's madness, this nonsense today that this is a clean break, it's a great deal. It's really Brexit. It isn't Brexit. It isn't. Whether he gets it through the House of Commons or not on Saturday, this is not Brexit. It's worse than May's deal, and it's worse than staying in the European Union. It's crazy. It's a shocker, really, is what it is. The Brexit Party leader, Nigel Farage, says to the BBC this afternoon, or said even, this isn't Brexit. Here he is.
Well, it's just not Brexit. I mean, we've taken 3.5 years to get to this point. And if this was to be agreed, we then enter into years more negotiations for the prize of a free trade agreement, which we already know we will not get unless we surrender our territorial fishing waters.
Yes, that's very important what Farage just said there. Now, I've no time for Nigel Farage or any of these people, as you well know, but this is true.
We know we will not get unless we surrender our territorial fishing waters, and we will not get unless we stay in regulatory alignment with the European Union. That means we will not be making our own laws in our own country on employment regulations, environment, and many other things. I think we've probably just done the easy bit the last 3.5 years. The next bit will be even harder. And look, it is a new EU treaty. It binds us in to so many other commitments on foreign policy, military policy, a list as long as your arm. And look, I frankly think it should be rejected. I think the best way out of this would be simply to have a clean break. And on Ireland, well, the backstop
was
pretty awful.
Clean break, Mr. Farage.
Yeah.
Yes. Sorry for interrupting you, but I understand, and I want our viewers to understand where you're coming from. You would be advocating, instead of people voting for this deal, that they reject it and that there is a no-deal Brexit and that Britain leave the EU on the 31st of October?
Well, I would very much like us to leave on the 31st of October, but I understand that the Benn Act has been passed and that makes it impossible. But would I rather accept a new European treaty that is, frankly, very bad for us, or would I prefer to have an extension and a general election? I will always go for the latter option. And I genuinely believe that a clean break and being able to be competitive is the absolute key to our future economic success. We cannot do that with this new treaty. And Boris Johnson can say what he likes, but we will never be able to properly break free of the EU if we sign up to this.
That was Farage on the BBC this afternoon. So in theory, the whole of the UK will be able to strike its own trade deals with non-European Union countries, in theory, as well as with the European Union. But none of the future trading agreement with the European Union has been discussed whatsoever. And Farage is right. It will involve European Union vessels accessing UK fishing waters, and it will also involve the UK accepting freedom of movement. We're not going anywhere. This is not leaving the European Union. Of course it isn't. Interestingly, as you heard at the top of the programme, later in the afternoon, Jean-Claude Juncker was speaking with Sky's Beth Rigby. He's the European Commission President, and he said there would be no extension even if the UK Parliament votes down the deal. He said there will be no extension, he says, even if UK Parliament votes down the deal.
If Boris Johnson today asks you to rule out an extension to Brexit, he wants it done by October the 31st, will you rule that out and say it has to be...
I gave a brief doorstep with Boris Johnson at the Parliament half an hour ago, and I was ruling out that there will be any kind of prolongation. If we have a deal, we have a deal, and there is no need for prolongation. That's not only the British view, that's my view too.
The bookies' view, or the bookmakers' view, is an interesting one, because the bookies are not too sure that we will be leaving on October 31st, even with this crappy deal. Currently, the best odds for the UK to leave the EU on Halloween are 2-1. Wow. That's Odds Checker, which accumulates. It's the aggregate odds from all the bookmakers. Anybody who wants to bet on a no-deal Brexit happening by Halloween, you'll get 6-1. We're not going to leave with no deal, so you'll get 6-1 on that. And Coral, the bookmaker, said today it had cut its own odds on the UK remaining in the EU after the 31st of October. And those odds are 2-5, or as we say, 5-2 on. So Coral reckons after October 31st, the UK will still be in the European Union. It's 18 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show for Thursday, October 17th, 2019. I was cut off after a half an hour of my YouTube live stream this morning when I was reading the newspapers. It wasn't the Jews that did it. Some of you silly people have had a problem with one or two of the computers not connecting to the hub at Richie Allen Radio Towers. It's not the Jews. Some of you people need to grow up. It's not the bloody Jews. Okay? I was ranting on about Zionism and Israel this morning and talking about Jewish identity in the way that I always do. And I went offline for a bit, but it wasn't because of any nefarious activity. Mossad couldn't give a shit about the Richie Allen Show. Neither could Manchester's Jews, most of whom never heard of the Richie Allen Show. Right? Right. Now, Liverpool MP, Liverpool Riverside MP, Louise Elman, who's been in the Labour Party for 55 years, is leaving the party. She said Jeremy Corbyn isn't fit to be Prime Minister and Jews are not safe, apparently, under Jeremy Corbyn. There you are. And despite the fact that the Labour Party has basically bent over backwards and done whatever the Zionist lobby in the country has asked it to do and has sworn allegiance to the UK's Jews or the UK's Zionists, despite the fact Labour has done that, I mean, Corbyn has been pathetic, she still says, no, it's not good enough. We are very worried. We are very worried, us Jews. She was on Sky with the pretty gormless Adam Bolton this morning. Here's a couple of cuts, a couple of choice cuts from Louise Elman's interview.
Well, Labour can't be an anti-racist party if it turns a blind eye to racism towards Jewish people. And
Jews are not a race. You can't be racist towards Jews. You might have a very strong religious prejudice against Jewish people because of their religious belief, but you can't be racist against Jews because they're not a race. They're not an ethnicity, right? I've said this a million times. I'm going to keep saying it, though, because it's very important, right? And you know what the Zionist lobby in this country has tried to do to this programme and to this presenter, right? So I'm not having it. You're not a race, love. You're a white woman who believes in a fairy godfather in the sky.
Jeremy Corbyn seems to have very great difficulty recognising that problem. He thinks it's confined to the right wing of politics, the National Front, the British National Party and groups of that sort.
Adam Bolton should jump in, but presenters in England are terrified of these people. He should jump in and say, well, hang on a second, Jeremy Corbyn has, of late and in the last couple of years, constantly said he will root out anti-Semitism in the Labour Party and it has no place. He doesn't say it's confined exclusively to right-wing people.
He can't see that it's there on the left, and since his...
Well, he has said it is on the left, and we have to deal with it. He said that 100 times lately.
Leadership, it's become dominant within the Labour Party. So I think that is a very great concern. It's not just about Jewish people. It's about the nature of our whole society. It's about diversity. It's about...
Diversity.
About acceptance.
Acceptance.
It's about people feeling at ease within society, and that's why it matters to the whole country.
Nobody is guaranteed to feel at ease within society. Nobody can guarantee that. We'd like to think that we'll all go about our daily lives and, you know, at ease. But you're going to come across, you know, points of view that you don't particularly appreciate every now and then, and nobody should seek to guarantee anybody else that they'll never have to come across something distasteful or repugnant. So give over, love. What about Jeremy Corbyn and his followers then? It's his followers, is it?
I think that people who support Jeremy Corbyn in almost a cult-like manner and just go...
I would agree with her. I would agree, but for different reasons. Jeremy Corbyn supporters are cult-esque or cult-like because it doesn't matter how many flip-flops he does on all of the important policies that basically wooed the lefties around the country to put him in as Labour leader, despite the fact he's reneged on all of those, their adoration of Jeremy, well, it knows no limit. It grows and grows and grows. So I would agree with Louise Elman.
Go along with whatever he's saying, and if he says there isn't anti-Semitism...
But he doesn't say there isn't anti-Semitism.
Or there is very little. They just accept that without even thinking about it. I think there are people who come from the hard left who, without realising it, have actually accepted some very old anti-Semitic conspiracy theories about Jewish people being all-powerful, controlling matters, acting in their own interests, and hardly recognise what they're doing. And for many other people, really oblivious to most of this, they just go along with what they see around them. There are people, there are brave people who do speak out, and I have people in my local party who have consistently spoken out against the anti-Semitism they see around them. But often other people dismiss that as simply smears against the leadership, and that to me is a horrendous thing to say.
Yeah. And wider society then? Is it everywhere anti-Semitism?
There's been a very worrying increase in anti-Semitism within British society as a whole, and indeed...
That's utter bullshit. There is no anti-Semitism, full stop. It doesn't exist, number one. Even if we accept that anti-Semitism is an acceptable term to use for prejudice against Jewish people, and it isn't. Let's say anti-Jewish people, and Jewish people are a religious group, let's say that it isn't on the increase. It's basically non-existent. Jews do well in the UK. I said this this morning. It's crap. And you wish that Adam Bolton would just pipe up once or twice and say, can you give me some examples of anti-Semitism rearing its ugly head in society? Because I don't see it.
Across Europe, this is...
And across Europe now.
Extremely disturbing. But when I see this phenomena rising in the Labour Party as well, and the leader of the Labour Party struggling to accept it, and then on top of that, the Equalities and Human Rights Commission conduct...
That's the polygraph machine in the background going off there as she is lying through her teeth about the rise of anti-Semitism. There just happened to be a polygraph machine lying on the desk next to her, and the machine just went bananas.
...a statutory inquiry into...
Yeah, piss off. What a load of nonsense. Nigel Farage, we heard from him earlier on. He happened to be in Sky Studios listening to Louise Ellman, and he was asked, after she had departed, is anti-Semitism a problem? What do you think Nigel Farage said?
Yes, I do. And I think there was a, you know, they had the big...
surprise, surprise!
Big report that Shami Chakrabarty did a few years ago. And I think kind of a blind eye's been turned to this. I think there was a problem with anti-Semitism, not just in the Labour Party, by the way. I think there was a whole narrative around the Israel-Palestine conflict where perhaps people's loyalties towards the Palestinian side have been allowed. They've been allowed to say things perhaps way, way ahead of what should have been allowed.
What things? Why didn't Adam Bolton say to him there, what things? What things are you talking about? This is what he says.
Israel-Palestine conflict, where perhaps people's loyalties towards the Palestinian side have been allowed. They've been allowed to say things perhaps way, way ahead of what should have been allowed.
Like what? Don't you just wish that we had one or two presenters today on television and radio that were of the ilk of the style that we were used to 25, 30, 35 years ago, where they would say, what exactly, Nigel, do you mean? What are the Palestinian sympathisers saying that is so offensive to those who call themselves Jews, for example? But of course, Adam Bolton just, he sings dumb.
There are, of course, other forms of racism around us,
sure,
as you know very well. Yours, Brexit, is a nationalist party, if I can put it that way.
Well,
that
a nationalist party. Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
What are you doing to ensure that you don't get racist elements joining up?
Well, I, as you may remember in UKIP, I forbade anybody who'd been a member of extreme organisations like the BNP from even being members of UKIP, and I'm doing exactly the same thing with the Brexit party. We will be, as a party, we will be deeply intolerant on intolerance.
Intolerant on intolerance.
You junkies bastards, yeah. You junkies bastards, yeah.
I'm a big child, me, I've always been. This is Bob Seger back with Eric Kaczewski. Bob Seger on the Richie Allen Show, old time rock and roll, waiting for Eric Kaczewski to drop in on the programme. We're cutting it a bit fine today. Eric is doing an interview at the moment, and he's just winding down from it. So we'll give him another couple of minutes to get ready. We've got him till the top of the hour. Don't forget, coming up in the second hour, we'll be off to Asia. And it's the small hours of the morning there. I'm really thrilled that David Dubin is waiting up to speak with us. Check out oilseedcrops.org. Former coffee buyer was David in Southeast Asia. and began to talk to farmers about how their crops were being damaged and failing because of the cold weather very near the equator in some of these countries. This led him down a path of research that, it brought him to Grand Solar Minimum. What the hell is that about? Well, it's coming, apparently, and it's going to have huge effects on us. And it basically is a massive big hole in the man-made CO2 story, which says that warming is going to cause cataclysmic weather events in the next 10, 15, 20 years that will be devastating for humanity. So we'll talk to David Dubois, and I'm looking forward to that. It's oilseedcrops.org, that's his website. John Kitson put me on to David, did John, and I'm really glad that he did. Right, my guest then, until the top of the air, is a terrific bloke. He really is. I'm glad I got to know him. He's been very kind to the Richie Allen Show. He does promote it, and he's been kind in inviting me on to speak on his outstanding programme. He's a podcaster, of course. You can find him at tradcatnight.org. He's got legions of listeners and followers. Describes himself as a traditional Catholic. And I knew nothing about this when we first spoke, and I was fascinated listening to him. His programmes and his writings talk about the coming one world religion, Agenda 2030, which is very relevant, the coming of the false prophet, apostasy in the Catholic Church. I really do like the guy. I think he's a terrific broadcaster as well. Let's welcome back to the programme Eric Gajewski. Eric, thanks for coming back on. How you doing?
Appreciate it, Richie. Appreciate your patience. I was just finishing up a podcast actually with Dr. Kendra Becker, and we were talking about the growing emerging medical police state here in this country. Yeah, something that we're keeping an eye on here at Tradcat Night. But things are getting shaky all across the world, as to be noted. Things happening all over the world. Specifically, I was hoping we could talk a little bit what's been happening with the apostasy in the church, Richie. It is going to such a level now where in the Vatican Gardens, they're actually promoting demon worship. Now, I know many of your listeners who might be Protestant will argue that Catholics worship idols. Of course, we don't believe this. However, now we do have this Pachamama, I think they're calling it Pachamama. We're in the Mother Earth worship, if you will. They're now putting up and setting up these idols, which have nothing to do with Christianity, and all in an effort to gain more momentum for this one world religion, which is emerging right before our eyes. And it's saddening. It's sobering. A lot of Catholics are outraged. I know if this happened in my local diocese, I probably would be thrown in jail, Richie, because I would be going nuts on these priests and prelates doing this nonsense. And Francis is sitting around just kind of smiling, taking it all in. I believe I mentioned in our last talk, Richie, I think that he is a high-ranking Freemason, a high-ranking Luciferian who knows exactly what he's doing. Did you see the news article that broke with the journalist, the atheist journalist Scalfari, where it was indicated to him that Francis doesn't even believe that Jesus was God while he walked upon the earth? So sort of a resurrection of the old heresy of Arianism. This is what we're seeing. And one of the points I wanted to make, Rich, and I'll hand it back over to you. I don't want to hog the conversation here, but this is everything that the early Catholic Church fathers warned. They said basically two things. When you see two things, you know the Antichrist is right around the corner. Rome returning to its ancient paganism, because it was first, of course, paganistic. Then under Constantine, it turned to Catholicism. Then it shifted to modernism under Vatican II, which is this phony Catholicism, which has been coming through the Vatican for the past 50 plus years. That's why we stay outside of those modern, quote unquote, Catholic churches. But now it's taken to the new level, just outright paganism. And so we have every reason to believe that the time is close. But then the other key indicator was the rebuilding of the Third Temple. We see Trump's hand in that, Putin's hand in that. These rabbis are, you know, preparing the heifer out there in terms of what they're getting ready for their Messiah, not our Messiah in the Christian world. Everything is right in front of us, Richie. It's really times which are unprecedented as recorded in Scripture. And I hope everyone is ready because everyone's going to be affected. People in Ireland, people in Europe, people in the United States, the whole house of cards is about to fall economically, socially, politically. And I'll hand it back over to you. I could rant all day about this stuff, but very dire times. I hope people are ready.
when we first spoke, researching you before we first spoke, I was really looking forward to the conversation. And prior to it, not being a religious person myself, prior to it, I thought, wow, what a very smart guy this guy is, Eric. I thought you were a bit paranoid because of your closeness to your own religion and to your beliefs when you talked about the symbolism and the demonology, if I can use that word, that you saw in the Vatican. But then I cross-referenced a few things. I didn't just take your word for it. And I saw things that I said to myself, yeah, if I was a Catholic, I would be concerned about these things. Now, I want to take you back to what you said about Francis, because that's very interesting. You said that a journalist has become convinced or believes that Pope Francis doesn't believe that Jesus is or was God on earth, because we were brought up to believe in the Holy Trinity, in God the Father and the Holy Ghost. And how does he know that? Is that a guess or is there any evidence? Because that would be hugely interesting if that's true, if the Pope doesn't believe it.
Well, it was apparently said to him, and he was just kind of being a mouthpiece for Francis. Now, it's interesting, this is not the first time he's talked to this Scalfari individual. It was just some years ago wherein it was revealed to Scalfari from Francis that he told an atheist who doesn't believe in God that, well, you know, it's okay that you don't believe in a God, just obey your conscience, and basically you're okay. From a Catholic perspective, again, that's not the case. You know, obviously, from a Catholic perspective, you not only have to believe in a God, you also have to believe in the true faith, which we believe as Catholics we're following. So it's kind of a twofold process there. Believe in the true God, also follow the Catholic faith. Well, when you just tell someone to obey your conscience and basically you're okay, you're basically making conscience your God, as opposed to any predisposed divine revelation or whatnot. So that actually was a rumor at first. Then it came out into the public that was the case. And so he's been like working through this mouthpiece, Scalfari, for quite some time. What's interesting, I bring on, you know, all these wonderful guests from worldwide, as you mentioned recently, internationally renowned journalist Marco Tosati came on the show. I also have another journalist, Julio Laredo, who runs TFP, which is another popular Catholic website. And they both told me, too, that it's just widely known amongst the Jesuits that there's a good number of them that believe that they're actually Arians. They don't believe that Jesus was God while walking upon the earth. And again, harping back on what I said, a lot of the esteemed theologians outside of the early church fathers said, you know, the Antichrist is about to show up when we go into another similar Arian crisis. And we're dealing with a modernist crisis, which is actually worse than Arianism, because Arianism was only one heresy. Since Vatican II, we've been dealing with heresy after heresy after heresy. I mean, I could do a whole 2-hour show on the heresies that have been coming out of since the Second Vatican Council. But ultimately, we're shifting from God worship to man worship. And then we're going to shift from man worship into Antichrist worship, which is going to be similar to Nebuchadnezzar. I'm not sure if you're listening to the audience, or you can recall, Richie, back in Old Testament.
The Old Testament, I do. Let me just quickly jump in, because, by the way, this deserves a 2-hour show before Christmas, you and I, on this program, to talk about these things from beginning to end. I know you might say 2 hours is not enough, but I'd like you to take us on a bit of a journey on a show to explain this to people who might be listening and don't understand some of the terminology, because I'm fascinated by it. Eric Gajewski is our guest, tradcatnight.org, hugely popular. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people listen to his programs and the brilliant guests he has on. And he's a fantastic interviewer. He really is. You get to hear the people he's speaking with. He asks them very intelligent questions. You get to hear them. It's really good stuff. Now, I'm not saying I agree with a lot of, with some of this or all of it or none of it. I don't know where I am on it, but I'm fascinated by it. Tell me this. You talk about the coming one world religion. This I'm fascinated by. What relationship is there between what you think will be some future world religion and the evangelical, almost religious, maniacal behavior of climate change protesters that we see around the world now?
There's definitely a connection between environmentalism and the one worldism, if you will, that we're seeing. Now, I'm one of those. I actually take a very unpopular approach, even in the Christian world, Richie. It's in Catholic prophecy that there is climate change. So I personally don't deny that. Now, is it contrived? I believe I had you on the show. We talk about this, right? Chemtrails, geoengineering, weather modification. That is happening. But there is something else out there that Jesus actually alluded to in Scripture, called the sign of the Son of Man. When this space body passes by, we're going to see it as a big X in the sky, or a cross in the sky, not an X. And it's going to show all the New World Order minions that Jesus still is in charge. And this is ultimately where we talk about the 3 days of darkness, because I mentioned to you off air, I wanted to cover my documentary here, which I just finished. And we'll get all that out in a second, because this one prolific mystic has detailed everything that we're seeing now and everything that's about to happen in the future, including the 3 days of darkness, which kills off the Antichrist and all the New World Order minions or whatnot. 3/4 of the world perish on the earth during these 3 days of darkness. But in any case, there is that connection. Basically, right now you have the unholy sea, and I say the unholy sea, not the holy sea anymore, because we've been infiltrated. It's run by Luciferians and Masons and Marxists now. And that marriage between the satanic UN and their Agenda 2030 principles. And it's not just climate change, which, again, it is happening, Richie, but they're taking advantage of it and they're taxing us more, you know, carbon taxes. It now also parlays into our conversation on paganism now with Mother Earthship. Now we've got these ecological sins that Francis is talking about. We're sinning against Mother Earth. And believe it or not, there's actually Mother Earth worship going on in Vatican II churches, in other, you know, supposed Christian churches. This is occurring right before our very eyes, and it's quite sad and sobering. But in turn, I don't know what specific rabbit hole you wanted me to go down with the climate change thing, but the earth changes which are happening, folks, they are going to be frightful, Jesus records. That man will die of fright, like basically anticipation of what's going to happen next. So I keep track of it on a daily basis. We had another round of earthquakes in San Francisco. We had massive quake swarm in the Philippines fires. yesterday. About a 7.0. I mean, it's going to start heating up. And basically, when we get to the 3 days of darkness, the whole world is going to be locked into a 10.0 earthquake and just shake for about 70 hours. So I've never been through an earthquake. I've heard 4.0s are pretty scary. I can't imagine anyone surviving if they're not in a state of grace, you know, sitting through like a 10.0 earthquake for 3 days straight, basically. That's going to be something else. But I'll hand it back over to you, Rich.
How much of that weather phenomena do you think might be being engineered by man and not coming from a celestial place? How much of it is coming from men interfering with natural weather patterns?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I'll kind of argue, and I have got no scientific proof behind this, but I would say, I don't know, maybe 20-25%. I mean, it's certainly a decent chunk. And as you mentioned, I bring on prolific speakers on the topic, such as Dane Wigington from geoengineeringwatch.org. I'm pretty sure you've had him on your show as well. I mean, others that keep track of this stuff, Patrick Wood over at technocracy.news, who's also a good interview if you haven't had him on the show yet. But, you know, obviously man can do that. And what's going to be kind of interesting, too, and it kind of ties with the Antichrist, who's going to show up onto the scene, because it's foretold that he's going to produce all these false signs and wonders. So let's say, you know, the good people of Ireland aren't doing what the Antichrist wants to do. Well, you know, of course, through weather modification, they could just shut down rain or cause it to rain and flood out, do whatever. So if you basically bow down and worship this guy, so to speak, and do what he asks, I mean, they could just kind of control and manipulate the weather to make it seem like this guy's doing something which he's not doing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. Yeah. It does.
So there. Go ahead.
No, sorry. No, I wasn't interrupting you. Eric Kaszewski is our guest. Before we talk about your documentary, stay just for a second with this new religion. I'm fascinated by the fact that the climate protests are being driven by children. And if I wanted to, I'm going to use very basic words now, I'm not going to use flowery language. If I wanted to create a new movement, and I wanted it to spread, and I wanted it to be a bit hysterical, and I wanted it to be, I don't know, kind of prophetic-like, I would spread it through children. And we're seeing all over the world, aren't we, children leaving their classrooms, demanding that their parents change their lives fundamentally in ways that people couldn't have imagined. Let's completely strip back our lives. Let's go back to cave living, basically. Let's shut off electricity, stop cars, stop airplanes. And it's coming from children all over the world. And, you know, I got into a little bit of trouble a few weeks back because I played a clip from the third Omen film with Sam Neill. And there's a scene in it when Damien, the devil, is addressing his flock. And they're all standing there, you know, completely locked into what he's saying and the emotion of it. And when you see these children, like the girl in Australia and the girl in Japan, and then you have Greta addressing these people, and they're standing there. It is worshipful and it is evangelical. And I just wonder, is that, I know you've already kind of answered this, but I want to stick with it just for a sec. Is that the common new world religion? This, you know, worship of, you talked about earth worship, Mother Earth worship, and people being enslaved in a way by it and being told, you know, self-flagellation almost, you can't live like this, you can't breathe almost, you can't move, you can't walk, you've got to stay trapped in your homes which can't have any heat and all the rest of it. I've never seen anything like it, Eric.
Yeah, no, no. Well, first of all, I want to say as a Catholic, as a Christian, I'm all for a simple life, you know, people who kind of live like the Amish or whatever. But obviously, this is propaganda here. And the reason why they use children is typically because children are equated with innocence, right? You see children, oh, how wonderful, they're innocent looking. And then you've got this Greta Thunberg. I think she's an Illuminati puppet. I've seen articles and pictures where she's throwing up that 666 hand sign that we covered, I think, on the last show. I mean, there's no doubt that this person is, in the very least, a puppet. I know Leo Zagami, who comes on my show, thinks she's actually possessed. I don't know, but she's definitely being used sort of as a figure, a symbolic figure for the movement. There's no doubt about that. And also children are being used for the gun control aspect, the commie gun control aspect that we're currently seeing as well. We all see what Trump is trying to do in this country, red flag law, social credit system to be employed in order to get guns. That's another whole, area, rabbit hole. But, you know, basically what the new religion is going to be this. Paganism and a return to Mother Earth worship is just an aspect of it. It's not the end game. The end game is going to be literal worship of Lucifer through this Antichrist. Jesus makes note of what's called the abomination of desolation. Ultimately, this guy that I have slated to be the Antichrist, again, his esoteric name is Maitreya. We don't know who it is out on the real scene right now. It's not any of the puppet world leaders that we see right now, in my humble opinion. He'll arrive after the economic collapse, which is pretty interesting because all this Trump impeachment talk has now prompted him to tweet out to the public, you know, if you go ahead and impeach me, there's going to be economic collapse and there's going to be civil war. Well, guess what we've been saying in the Catholic world for quite some time, because it follows Catholic prophecy. There's going to be an economic collapse and there's going to be civil war, which is all preliminary to the 3 days of darkness. But
you think he's
case,
here, Eric. You think that entity that would be Satan, you think that person is here, is amongst us, but isn't yet known.
The Antichrist is definitely here amongst us. I mean, there's been notable people in the church, whether it's been Archbishop Lefebvre, who's sort of a leader in the traditional movement. I mean, even Pope St. Pius X said way back in early 1900s that he felt that the Antichrist was about to arrive onto the scene. And we know it's, you know, considering the headlines that we read now, it was child's play back in the early 1900s. It certainly wasn't as bad as it was now. But Cardinal Biffy made a reference to this Mother Teresa humanitarianist type to come onto the scene, who we call the Antichrist. We've got Father Malachi Martin when talking about the Third Secret of Fatima, who was a Jesuit whistleblower, as some of your listeners may know. He said that he was here. He is here. Everything is in place now, essentially, for this one world religion. What has to happen is they've got to unify humanity on a non-Catholic level, on a non-doctrinal level. It's sort of like the Olympics. Like, we all kind of get along. We push aside doctrine. But all that you're going to have to do, Richie, is to take this guy's mark, and then ultimately bow down before him and worship his image, which is coming, by the way, on, you know, doing research on this one Maitreya character. I mean, this put the, you know, made my hair stand up on the back of my head, because this is an intimate detail as to why I think he's the one, is that they say in all Masonic temples, his image is going to go up, and in Christian churches. So what you're going to see now in Christian churches, not just in the bogus, you know, Catholic with a K churches, you're actually going to see tabernacles, you know, removed out of churches and his image being set up. I don't know if that's going to start in like 2020. Is it still like 3 to 5 years away? But pay attention to that, because it's going to actually evolve from, you know, Mother Earth worship into his image worship.
Will there be a digital, just before we talk, because we've got about 11 minutes left, and I want to talk about Mary Julie Jeheny. I want to talk about her fascinating in the documentary, which I can't wait to see, by the way. Tradcantonight.org, I don't need to tell you, tradcantonight.org. Eric Kaszewski is our guest. Great to have him back on the program. Fascinating stuff, this. Tell me this, very quickly, before we talk about the documentary. A digital aspect to this Antichrist, and maybe the mark you describe, maybe a chip in our bodies, a chip in our brain. Elon Musk is talking about chips ready to go to connect us to the internet. What do you think?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, microchipping is an aspect to it, but specifically from a religious point of view, this Mark of the Beast is actually going to be a Luciferian initiation, as one of the higher ups in the UN talked about this, David Spangler. He said no one will be able to enter the New Age without this Luciferian initiation. So I always go back to some predictive programming. I don't know if you ever seen that Doctor Strange movie, a Marvel movie.
Oh yeah.
You remember the mark that they kind of had like on their forehead at a certain point? And by the way, that main character that was sort of neuter, you couldn't figure out whether it was a guy or a girl. I don't even know what the character's name was. That was representative of the Antichrist, by the way, Maitreya. And then he had these ascended masters around him that were kind of working for him. Well, that's what we have right now. There's going to be, on the day of declaration, after they declare, the UFOs have been with us and these ascended masters have been with us for ages. They're going to help us evolve or whatnot. It ties into the new religion. And you're going to have to take this mark. It will be a microchip. It's a counterfeit baptism is how Saint Hildegard put it. So in the Catholic Church, there's seven sacraments. When the formal new religion happens in Rome here shortly under the false prophet, who's going to be the sidekick, the Robin to the Batman, if you will, the Antichrist, this person will go around and perform all kinds of false signs and wonders and actually get these images set up in churches or whatnot. Again, I'm not suggesting, even over the next few years, but 5 years, give or take.
You believe it? Let's do that before Christmas. Let's do a proper show, you and me, on this, because I know my listeners are fascinated. If you look at Twitter, you divide my listeners like nobody. It's fantastic. By the way, Eric has got skin as thick as mine or thicker. He's well able to take all types of points of view. A lot of people on my Twitter feed saying they're very interested in what you're saying and they're following it. And one or two saying, oh, we've heard prophets of doom like Eric in the past, blah, blah, blah. You divide the audience. But to be fair, today, I think the majority of people are with you. They're very interested in this. Tell me this, my friend. Tradcantnight.org, by the way. I'm sure you know who Eric is, but if you haven't heard him before, his interviews are excellent. He doesn't just talk about these prophecies on his show, although, of course, traditional Catholicism is important. He talks to people about every subject that you've ever heard on this program. And you'll hear a lot of people that you've never heard on the Richie Allen Show, academic men and women. I recommend you check it out. Now, what an amazingly fascinating woman Marie-Julie Jehenny was. Born in the mid-19th century, lived until, I think, the mid-40s or late 40s, I can't remember. She had apparitions of the Blessed Virgin Mary. I think she saw Jesus, and she bore the stigmata. I guess the fact you have made this documentary, Eric, you reckon, French woman, of course, you reckon she's obviously a very important figure. Tell us about her and the film you've made.
Yeah, very important figure. The website to it is vimeo.com/on-demand/ Marie Julie movie. Folks, I highly recommend it. If you've never heard of this one mystic in a Catholic church, she held the stigmata the longest in Catholic church history, about 65 years. She once fasted, and this was under medical supervision, 5 years without eating or drinking anything, just ate the Eucharist, which, in the Catholic Church, we believe we're eating the true body of our Lord Jesus Christ. So that's what she was sustained on for 5 years. She was a victim soul, very holy woman who was approved by our local bishop. And she forewarned of a lot of the atrocities during her own time, obviously the world wars that were upcoming. But then also specifically talk about this apostasy that we're seeing in the church now, the return of a great European Catholic king that would help to get things moving in a Christian manner eventually. But then again, the much anticipated 3 days of darkness, which in my humble opinion, given all my knowledge in Catholic prophecy, is going to literally kill off all of the enemies of Christianity. Ultimately, there's certain things that have to be done during these 3 days of darkness if you even are to survive. But it's a quite an interesting story. And what's interesting also is this, Richie, she has a house, a pretty famous house out there in Brittany, France, because Brittany, France is going to be one of the rare few safe havens. So when you see all this stuff happening, if you don't believe me now, Richie, you might have to go bunk out in Brittany, France, because this is going to be a safe place. And I bring on a woman Okay, she's a French woman who is in possession of Marie-Julie Jehenny's house. And she comes on a monthly basis. We do video interviews. As a matter of fact, in 4 days, we're going to do our next prolific video interview. So again, sign up to tradcatnight.org. And she tells me that the Freemasons are trying to gain control of this house. She has all kinds of French government officials arriving, trying to figure out who the great monarch is or whatnot. But we talk about details that you'll not find on any of the English websites that are promoting Marie-Julie Jehenny. And last I spoke to her, there are people in droves making pilgrimages out to her house because she now realizes that everything that Marie-Julie Jehenny has said, including that Notre Dame fire, remember the cathedral fire?
Yeah.
She predicted that back in the late 1800s. As a matter of fact, there's a prominent Catholic prayer card which shows Our Lord and Our Lady weeping over the cathedral fire in France. That was back in the late, like, 1800s, folks.
Not to be an arsehole now, because I try not to be. I know I am sometimes, but I try not to be. Was she kind of semi-specific about the date? Did she give any inclination as to when it would happen? I'm not doubting it now. I'm not believing it, but I'm not doubting it either. Do you think that she knew when the fire would happen?
No, she didn't give any specific date as to when it would happen, just be in the future. Now, I thought you were going down the route of the 3 days of darkness, because the 3 days of darkness are going to happen.
Well, that's important,
days. It's going to happen on a Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, because it's going to be sort of in replication of our Lord's passion. Sort of like we feel the church is going through a passion right now. We feel that there are less and less valid masses being offering worldwide. This is why the whole world is going to be thrown into darkness. And so what I also offer to your folks is this, like, we're not only going to be dealing with a communist persecution, but when I say demonic is coming, that's to put it mildly. In these 3 days of darkness, every devil is going to be let loose. So this is where we get into the conversation about CERN, about Apocalypse 9 and every devil being let loose, predictive programming in these movies like The Avengers, where wormholes are opened up and you see all these kind of crazy beasts coming from the other side. This is basically what's going to happen during the 3 days of darkness. So if you don't check out this movie, I think you'll be doing yourself an injustice, folks. It's getting good reviews. I've gotten some good, decent constructive criticism, as any movie is going to get, but at least it gives you a basis for, what's happening now and what is going to happen in the future. I'll give you one little tidbit. Paris is going to get nuked, according to her prophecy. So look for that in the not so distant future.
Jeez,
So there's a lot to happen, but I appreciate you taking time out. And again, 30 minutes doesn't do this justice, but man, I'm just so overwhelmed with doing media appearances, doing my own podcast. I'm like running left and right, trying to make things happen.
I'm glad you fitted me in, because these issues, the whole climate thing, the one world religion, very relevant. I'm glad that we got to speak this week. We will do something before Christmas in early December. We'll make a night. We'll get a good kind of start to finish where all this began for you, this traditional Catholicism. We'll talk about it when we don't have to rush through it, and you can take your time. We'll field questions from the audience as well. For more on the film about Marie-Julie Jehenny, go to tradcatnight.org and do check it out. I will be watching it this weekend. I'm going to make it my business, Eric. I really appreciate your time today. I know you've got to run off and do more interviews and write more articles. So we'll let you go for today. I'll give you the final word. We've got about 35 seconds. If you want to have the final word, you can have it. And again, thanks for your time.
Well, in terms of relation to being labeled a prophet of doom, I mean, that's fine and dandy. I mean, Noah was a prophet of doom, so to speak. We've got Jonah in the Old Testament, a prophet of doom. Essentially, that is sort of what my work is, to go out there and warn people. And this is why, per Catholic prophecy, Richie, Jesus keeps indicating few are going to survive. Not even a minority of people are going to survive this. Few. It's going to be sort of Book of Eli-ish. That's how bad it will get. Our Lady of Akita in the end says the survivors will find them so desolate that they'll envy the dead. Now we're talking about basically Christians who survived that period, because from our perspective, that is what's going to survive. Without faith and hope, folks, we don't make it through these times. But in the end, light conquers over darkness. It's going to show that God is still in control. And we've got to continue to press on, like Richie said, and speak what we have to say. I'm not very well liked in Catholic communities, or really in any other community for that matter. I mean, people are interested in what we have to say. There are like a lot of Richie Allens out there like, oh, this guy's interesting, but I don't necessarily agree with what he has to say. Well, when all this stuff starts happening, maybe you'll come join us.
Well, you have to have integrity, don't you? When you listen to somebody, and I listen to you, and I don't know if what you say is true or not, but I don't dismiss you. And if things do begin to happen, you've got to have the integrity to say, wow. But I've always been like that. You know, when if and when things start happening, I'll be the first guy to go, let's get Gajewski back on the programme. He told us this, folks. That's the way it's got to be. Do you know what I think? I think this supernatural thing, this battle, I think you're onto something there. I really do. And look, we'll talk about this in December when I'm able to. Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
One more thing. If you get this up on your YouTube, I'll be posting for my Tradcat Night YouTube channel. If you do get this up on YouTube, I think you put all your shows up there. I'll put the actual link to the movie up so your people can just go ahead and click on that. Yeah.
So will I, mate. Thanks again for your time today, Eric. Cheers, mate. And bye for now. Great to have you back on the program. Eric Gajewski, tradcatnight.org. Check him out. What I think is, I think that obviously we're heading towards something. We know that those of us who have been, I don't know, exposed to Sitchin and Maxwell and David Icke and Jim Mars and others, we know there's something supernatural going on. We know that there's some non-human element to what's happening to us. There's no doubt about that. And I think he's onto something. And I think that the evil elements that he sees doing great harm to humanity, I think he's right about that. But maybe he doesn't have the details right. Maybe he's going down the wrong track with Catholicism. Or maybe he isn't. I don't know. I'm fascinated by it. I do take on board the comments from our listeners who think that Eric is a prophecy of doom monger or a end of times prophet or whatever. Fair enough. Well, I think he's very interesting. One thing I do believe about him is he's very smart, he's very articulate, and he's a very nice guy. And I don't discount or dismiss anything or anybody, not anymore. Right, very quick 60-second break. Back in a minute with plenty more. David Duboyne joins the programme real soon. Don't go anywhere.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Right, coming back in a couple of minutes with David Duboyne. You don't want to miss this, really important in light of current news events. This is the Richie Allen Show, by the way, broadcasting live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv and richieallen.co.uk. It is the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. You're damn right it is. And my name is Richie Allen. Back with more very interesting talk after this from the Kings of Leon. This is a track called Pyro. Let's move on. Lots of comments on Twitter. If you want to read them, just go to twitter.com, where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word. If you do that and press enter, you will see what people are tweeting to me. Excited to be speaking with my next guest. Before I introduce him, by the way, you'll be aware that this morning, commuters in London dragged climate change protesters off the roof of a tube train. That's the London Underground. There were scuffles and people were kicked and beaten. A number of people applauding it while it happened. This has escalated and escalated over the last couple of weeks. Extinction Rebellion activists have been protesting in London and they have been popping up on our television screens, on news and television and radio, telling us that if we don't become carbon neutral immediately, if we don't become zero carbon or zero, what is it? Net carbon, yeah, that's right. Net carbon zero, get it right, Richie. If we don't become net carbon zero real soon, well, all sort of apocalyptic things are going to happen in the next few years and human life will be transformed on planet Earth. Now, you know I don't believe this. I believe that we are dirtying and polluting and fouling up the earth and the oceans. I think we are doing that, but I don't believe that CO2 created by man and man's activities are changing the climate. I don't believe that. Not because I'm paid by any big oil and gas companies, I just don't believe it. This is Evangelical, spoke about this in the first hour, and these people want to, speaking of transforming human life, they want us to go back to the Stone Age, and increasingly they are being listened to, and the movement is growing. Now let's speak with my next guest. He's a fascinating man, because he used to buy coffee in Southeast Asia, which must have been a fantastic job, very interesting job indeed. And he would have described himself as somebody who believed in the man-made CO2 climate change story. But when he was going about his business in Burma, or Myanmar as we call it now, he began hearing stories about how cold damage was causing problems to farmers in places near the equator. That led him to begin to look for answers, to begin to question the CO2 global warming story. And it led him into reading about and finding out about things like the grand solar minimum and how it is in fact the sun that drives climate change on planet Earth. He's got an excellent website called oilseedcrops.org, and he also makes podcasts, and you can find him on YouTube. I'll put links out. And he gets tens and tens and tens of thousands of listeners and viewers on YouTube. It's incredibly popular. I'm really grateful to him for staying up late. He's in Asia at the moment, where it's about 1 o'clock in the morning. So thanks to him for doing it. Let's welcome to the program David Dubois. David, I'm really honored to have you on the program. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Richie, thank you. I'll get up at any time in the morning because we live in a 24-hour world. But yeah, it looks like Extinction Rebellion is going extinct in itself. I mean, they're trying to have you reduce your lifestyles. It seems like a bunch of middle class people yapping down to, you know, those with less money that are really need to go to work every day and disrupting services. I don't know. Everybody's on their soapbox trying to preach. It's such hypocrisy when they have the interviews with so many people leading this Extinction Rebellion. You know, they ask them the simple questions. Do you have a TV? Do your children have iPads? How did you get to this place? Did you drive? Did you take a train? What hypocrisy? They're all in the system, driving their SUVs, driving their cars to these protests, buying all the goods. If it's such a climate emergency, why are we not stopping all global commerce at the moment? Forget just air travel. Everything ceases. But you know, when I was back in the States last week, it was all about buy a second car, get a new car, get a loan for a car, buy a new house, buy this, buy that. Let's just buy more stuff and bring trinkets of junk across the ocean on polluting boats. But nobody wants to talk about that. It's just, hey, you got to reduce your lifestyle here, but don't talk about China's pollution, just ours. We need to reduce our lifestyles. And I really just do not accept that. I really don't. So we can start the conversation any way you want. But, you know, I've noticed a couple things about climate or the Extinction Rebellion and all this climate neutral, narrative that's out there. It's not even, in my opinion, true protest. It's a narrative pushed forth by money. And you know, you saw that article that I think it was in, I forget which, it wasn't The Guardian, it was another publication, I think it was Independent in the UK, that talked about these protesters were being paid anywhere from £400 to £600 per month to organize the protest. It's not organic, it's paid for.
They are paid for. You're right, it was in The Guardian, it was in the Mail, the Daily Mail here in the UK as well. Many of these middle classes, you properly described them, activists are being paid expenses to the tune of hundreds of thousands of pounds. You made an excellent point there about China. David Dubois is our guest. Before we talk about your own story, David, which is absolutely fascinating, there's a real kind of evangelical fervour to this Extinction Rebellion movement. It's grown up out of nothing very, very quickly. There's no resistance to it. Well, there is a little bit, but in terms of the media, you made another excellent point there when you said when they appear on television and radio, the presenters give them a very easy ride. One of the things the presenter never does is ask them, can you please explain to me forensically, scientifically, how you know for a fact that in 10 years' time we're going to have these catastrophic weather events. None of that happens. So it's evangelical fervour, very quick, grown exponentially, like nothing I've ever seen. Is that reason to be suspicious of itself, David?
I would. And here's what I'm also thinking is, my take on the reason I started this Adapt 2030 YouTube channel and the Mini Ice Age Conversations podcast was to bring information out that the sun does repeat in these cycles. They're repeatable, they're mappable, we know when they come again, and it's already been confirmed the way that the sun behaves with the peaks on the, when it comes into a solar maximum on its 11-year solar maximum, generally it has a shorter peak and then it's followed by a higher peak. And usually it's a double peak when we get into the solar maximum. But what they found in reconstructions with different kind of isotopes and observations from the sun is that when it goes into a higher peak first and a secondary lower peak on that, it reverses itself. Then we, that's confirmation that the next solar cycles, plural, are going into exceptionally low output, which we're heading into right now. And those of you that are listening in the UK, you might be more familiar with the Maunder Minimum and the ice fairs on the Thames River. That's where we're going back into right now. Nobody's talking about it. It seems as if they're getting us prepared for the wrong thing. But I will add before, one thing that I see in this Extinction Rebellion message is it's about the lack of food. You know, everywhere is talking about, we're not going to have enough food. We're not going to have enough food. Well, that's the exact same thing I'm saying. We are not going to have enough food because as our crop grow zones get cooler and the crop seasons in terms of planting and harvesting get reduced like we're seeing already, we're not going to have enough food. Now, is this runaway fervor that's coming out with no resistance in the Extinction Rebellion movement, is it a soft disclosure that we won't have enough food, but they're getting you look to the warming instead of the cooling, because the cooling will make you change your lifestyle habits on a dime when you really see how close we are. It's not going to be 2100. It's not going to be 2050 when we experience these changes. It started this year. We've had decimation of the global crop yields in the Northern Hemisphere, if anybody's paying attention. And here we go. Food prices up on our first true crop. I call this year, well, Celeste Bishop Saloom calls it year zero as termed by FEMA in the United States, which is, you know, patient zero when they have a disease and the outbreak. And that's the first patient that they actually, you know, peg this to as the spread of a disease. Well, they're calling this year zero for food crop losses, as this is it, the first year that we start to lose food production globally. And as we march forward, just like Extinction Rebellion's talking about, no food in the future. So their 12-year timeline matches pretty much with Valentina Zarkova's, you know, world governments need to stockpile food right this second to prepare for what's coming in 2028 to 2032, when we literally won't be able to grow enough food for this planet's population at the moment. It's really interesting how the overlay on the timelines is here. It's more like it's soft disclosure. Same thing in America with the crop losses. They're saying, look at the cold. It's wiping out American crops. Yet they're not talking about the grand solar minimum or the late planting. They're just pegging it on a single event. Again, it's soft disclosure to get you ready. And that's where I think the program could go today, because it's in our faces now. We're at year zero and prices up from now. And good luck trying to get your food in the future.
Let's talk. We are going to stay with that theme, because a lot of our listeners will be absolutely staggered to learn that cold temperatures are playing havoc with farmers' yields in America and around the world. This will be the first they will have heard of it, David. That's why it's terrific to have you on the program today. Thanks for mentioning Valentina. She was on the program with me a few weeks ago, or a few months ago. I found it fascinating, the mathematician Valentina Zarkova. Before you explain in as simple terms as you possibly can, I know you already did, but break it down again in a second, what the grand solar minimum will mean. I have a question for you. I think you're right. I think this is going to happen. Won't the evangelical, I'm going to keep calling them because they are evangelical, whipped up almost crazies. Maybe I shouldn't speak about people like that. But they are going to blame the solar minimum and the colder weather. They're going to blame it on man-made climate change and man-made CO2 emissions, aren't they? Because it doesn't matter what happens today in 2019. I'm in Greater Manchester, David. I know you know your geography. Just like Southeast Asia, my friend, it rains a lot here. And you know what? We get a couple of rainstorms and somebody on the radio says it's climate change. I mean, they do. Manchester has had rain since Moses was in short trousers, right? But if it rains heavy tomorrow, they blame it on climate change. Surely when we enter this, you know, extreme cold period, they're going to blame it on climate change, right?
They already started doing that. Remember when let's take everybody back to, say, the year 2005. We were told snow would never be seen again. Snow would be a thing of the past. Yeah. Our children would never know what snow was. We need to go into virtual reality headsets to see snowfalls. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember
yeah.
that? Those were the statements. And then here we are, 2015, 2014, they really started that flip in the media of, well, warming oceans is causing heavier record snowfalls. Wait a second. If the science was settled, where did that bait and switch gigantic flip come into no snow into record snows were expected? I mean, didn't you know that? I mean, record snows were already expected because of heating oceans. You didn't get the memo. Well, you know what? All the memos for the last 40 years didn't say that. So something flipped and now they're, you know, they'll get anybody to buy it. It's if you say it frequently enough and, you know, add different things in our food supply and taint the water and, you know, taint the skies and get people distracted with media and people distracted with television and all the news and get them to distract and fight within themselves and drive wedges in our society. Nobody has time to look at what's really going on. And the full game plan is right in front of you there. It's about distraction. So you're not preparing because keep this in mind. The governments of our planet are fully aware of this grand solar minimum, and they are in full preparation mode. But they don't want you diving into what their supplies would be, so they're sending you in the wrong direction while they procure the items behind. I mean, how can you explain full-on shortages of canned goods in the United States except a mega buyer coming in and swooping all the supply? We've seen it for the canned goods, several different types of canned goods, from tomatoes to peas to beans, canned fruits, the peaches and different types of things ran out for some time. Now, who bought all that production? And then the long-term food storage, too, you know, like kind of MRE packs, if you will. You rip them open, you can prepare 2,000 calories per bag, et cetera.
Droid
Those
food,
disappeared for quite a while, too. People were coming in with cash buys and swooping everything out of all the warehouses. And it's again and again. First it was ammunition, then it was food, and then second it's food, and now it's a different kind of food, and now it's canned food, and then it was box food. Who's buying all this behind the scenes? And see, if the true grand solar minimum information came out, we would all be buying the same tools, seeds, foods, long-term preparation materials to store your food for a longer time. And I think people wouldn't go to work, people wouldn't obey the law, it would upset the cart before the actual tornado comes right at us.
This is fascinating stuff, David. David's website, by the way, I've given you that. I'll give it to you again. Adapt 2030 on YouTube. If you put Adapt 2030 in, you'll find the YouTube channel. All of the info. I've been browsing the channel over the last couple of days. Big thanks to John Kitson for putting me in touch with David. I'd heard David's name mentioned a couple of times before about the grand solar minimum. So glad that we connected today. Adapt 2030 on YouTube and oilseedcrops.org. You see, this is the beauty of doing this program. I didn't know this. I'm shocked. Somebody or some bodies have been mass buying long-lasting dried food and canned food in the United States. If it's happening in the United States, David, it must be happening here as well. And you say because they know damn well that the grand solar minimum is coming 2028 into the 2030s, but they don't want us to prepare for it. Is that even more sinister maybe than maybe you're saying? Is it because maybe somebody wants maybe a lot of us not to be around for much longer after 2030? What do you think?
Well, that's right. I wouldn't exactly call it sinister. I would just call it a game plan being unfurled as we speak. Now, think about Brexit. This is a perfect excuse for the government in your country to bring in as many possible supplies as they could without making anybody blink an eye. Because you saw, you know, they say I followed a couple butter stories for the UK talking about Brexit. Well, they had all the warehouses completely full of butter and they didn't know where to put the excess butter, thinking that, you know, when the deal happened, deal, no deal, whatever, that there would be shortages of a lot of medicines and, you know, yeah, just regular goods. So they stockpiled. So all you're hearing over there is, oh, you need to stockpile. You need to, well, what's your government doing? Now, if all this Brexit wasn't going on and the government was bringing in 50 times more supplies than usual on purchase orders, et cetera, that might raise a couple red flags. But now all this talk of Brexit allows them to bring in whatever they want to for continuity of government in terms of food, machinery repair parts, whatever it would be, building construction supplies, unhindered. Nobody will even blink an eye. But it would have 5 or 8 years ago if they would have brought in that much material. People would be like, whoa, where's all this going to? So see, there's all these masking events going on to explain away either shortages or unusual behavior by governments or just the economy in general, the way it's morphing and shifting. But it's all distraction and it's all a cover story for governments around the world to prepare behind the scenes. And I am so glad that I have seen through some of the smoke and mirrors. And that's why I'm truly doing the channel. I care about everybody's well-being out there. I want people to understand that this is here And there's a whole different causation for the weather changes that we're seeing that can be explained through history and cycles. So if you know the cycle is going to repeat, you see what the outcome could be, sort of. It's going to be very different today because we have different technology, different interconnectivity and communication-wise, international shipping. But the the same three things always occur with this grand solar minimum. I call it the fingerprint. We get population migration, population reduction, and unavailability of food and higher food prices, which again tweaks the economy and the economic contraction. So we know these are going to happen every single time, but this 2019 to 2030 era is going to manifest a little bit differently than it did in the 1640s. You know, and if you go back to 1280, it's going to manifest differently. Or 800 AD, our current time is going to manifest different than 800 AD, or the late antique little ice age at 535 AD, or 79 AD. I mean, talking about the Roman Empire having difficulty keeping it together versus the American Empire. I mean, it's two different things. So it's going to play out differently, but we know what's going to happen. Those population migration, economic collapse, and lack of food, and then higher food prices. So if you can get ready for that, and you know what's coming, you don't come at it from fear. You can make very wise choices when everybody else is screaming for the door to the left. You can just easily, casually walk out the door to the right with no fighting going on. That's the way I'm looking at it is the more information you have, why the changes are occurring, the better you can prepare for these changes coming.
But you know what, David, what you've just described there, the migration, which would be inevitable, of course. I do believe you, by the way, and I looked very closely at what Valentina Zharkova was saying, and I do think you're absolutely right. We are heading into a cooling period, a very cooling period. And I've interviewed scientists and meteorologists over the years as well. The ones who will come on, the climate change guys will never come on because they don't want any sort of debate. They don't want to be challenged. But the ones who are coming at it from the point of view that man-made CO2 is not warming the planet, those guys, many of them have agreed that, as you've said yourself in your excellent videos and on your website, the sun drives climate on planet Earth, nothing else. The sun does, that's true. And in a period of very low solar activity, which I believe you are right, we are heading towards, it's going to be very, very cold. Now, the conditions you describe, particularly the mass movement of people, I tell you what, David, those are perfect conditions for global conflict, for a war. What do you think? A big war.
Well, that would be a perfect way to explain away all the crop losses across the planet that they haven't been telling everybody about, because if the supply chain breaks down, there's another convenient excuse. Oh, your supply chain broke down because of the war. It wasn't that there wasn't enough food to really deliver to you and you can't get it at your home purchase place. It was the war that stopped the flow of goods. That wasn't because we didn't tell you about the crop losses. See, again, another perfect excuse to explain away something that is so inconvenient that is, if you talk about this, if the news was to get on and do it, as much as Extinction Rebellion is pushed in the news, if they pushed really this loss of crops that's coming up, I think society would change in a matter of weeks of people getting ready.
David, tell me this. Now, you're going to tell me probably that they are, but I don't see it. Why are the world's farmers not blowing the whistle on this? Why are farmers, because they know, don't they? They must know. Real farmers, they know their land like they know the hairs on their arms. They know their land. And they will know this is happening. So why are they not talking about it?
They are, but for them, they have bigger issues like getting seed for next year, getting the loans paid off, getting their machinery up and running. They're trying to play catch up with what the weather's throwing at them. And almost all farmers understand the global conditions of what used to be the regular planting by date has shifted months. And we're already experiencing blizzards and freezes two times already in this first week of October and the last week of September. So they understand something's changing, but most of them are not on social media. The ones that are do tweet or do videos about it. Yasana Ranch is a great one, going into the corn production, talking about this. But just the general, if you think about 100 farmers, there'll be one that could be on social media and the rest are talking amongst themselves, but they're trying to figure out their own day-to-day problems to stay alive in this competitive world of mega farms trying to gobble them up and try their best to put them out of business. So they have bigger fish to fry literally on their plate of just trying to keep their farms afloat versus trying to warn the world or talk about these such things. That's the best way I can describe it.
David, I've loads of questions for you. It's 26 and a half minutes past the hour. There's huge reaction on Twitter right now to you being on the programme. Thanks for coming on. It's YouTube Adapt 2030. David Dubois, do go to oilseedcrops.org. This is totally true, this. I'm endorsing this because I know it to be true, because I've been looking at this myself for the last couple of years, and it's important that you understand this. Is there evidence of this in stock market manipulation, David? Surely there is. Surely the people who know this is happening, they're having presumably unparalleled success in betting on and speculating on and short selling crops and things like that in the stock market. It must be going on, right?
I think you've seen a couple of videos I've done on the USDA, that's United States Department of Agriculture, putting out such bogus information, going completely against the market. And, you know, get this. Now, this is a perfect example here, and I'll let everybody draw their own conclusion if there was insider trading or if the USDA is releasing information to traders to allow them to profit on what they will say. Now, you have to understand, in the United States, the bombogenesis that rolled through in the early part of the planting season was the biggest devastating floods in American history in the middle of the crop growing regions. There were places that are still not even close to being repaired, even getting the roads back in there, let alone getting the fields refurbished where they can plant. They were looking at an initial 30 million acres taken offline for corn production, 30 million. And that was coming from the social media, the tweets, people on the ground, news forecasts, actually news footage and helicopter footage, et cetera. Inland seas formed in the United States on our grow zones. And the USDA had the gall to come out and say that we would increase our corn production 2% from last year's totals.
Wow.
Now, you know, this bankrupted an enormous amount of farmers, because in the same breath, the USDA was giving advice to farmers, knowing that they would get such losses, for them to go long on corn. So if they couldn't meet their obligations for delivery, that they would have some money to pay off the contracts and take the penalty for non-delivery. But then they put out that thing that bankrupted. It dropped so much that everybody got stopped out. But there were 300,000 contracts put the day before to go the opposite way the market was trending. So you tell me if there was insider trading. I firmly believe they need to be investigated. And I think that the way they're doing these estimates, they're more market stabilizers than they are giving us true information. But that was just downright fraud, what they did. And then the second report was really no better. And here we are now, they're trickling away some of the losses. Now, where they say, oh, we're going to lose a few percent. You know, these independent forecasters are saying there's a 40% reduction in just the corn alone. And they were calling a 14% down just on what they've seen in the weather reports for soybeans. Just in a matter of days, they reduced the entire United States soybean crop by 14%. And these are independent, you know, forecasters, but the USDA is trickling along. And I love it in their last reports there. They say, well, we finally have some good solid numbers from, you know, what's being planted. I'm sorry. It's taken you 4 months to realize what's been planted or not. And now we're in the harvest season and they're just giving us data from the planting time. Like, where's the disconnect of 4 months of information that's missing? I actually called the USDA myself and tried to find out what the crop insurance, like if you can't plant your field, it's called Prevent Plant. Now, everybody should have filed by now, so it should be on record how many acres were filed for no plant. I tried to get that information, and they told me they couldn't give it to me. They have to wait for it to be released, and I said, you know what? That's 2 months ago that those claims had to be in. Where are the numbers? And they're like, well, it's still being tallied. And I'm like, no, it's not being tallied. It's done. 2 months ago, where are the numbers? And I couldn't get any further than that. So they know what's happening, and they're holding back as long as they can. And insider trading is the main thing going on during these crop losses here. I tell you what, I'm not even going to say crop losses anymore. I'm going to say crop devastation. I'm going to change my lexicon to devastation in Canada and the United States. We're going back to yields that are lower than 1938 for this year's harvest. You got to really put that in context. We're going to produce less grain in 2019 than we did in 1938 because the records only go back to 1938. That's the furthest they go back. So when we're getting this low in production in America, and then look what happened with the army worm wiping out China's crops there this year too. The publicly Chinese media was allowed to say 35% reduction in crops due to the army worm in the spring and then also in the fall. That's official. You know, it's way higher if China's allowing their state media to say 35% reduction. And then we got the trade war, and then China's exempting all U.S. farm goods to come in. Strategic pork reserves released from China due to the swine flu. Everywhere you look, major producers are struggling. And now just looking at this thing here before our interview, Argentinian production forecast now to go to 18.3 million tons, 3 million tons lower than USDA estimates. I don't know. Everywhere you look, the USDA is a farce, a sham. It's working for big traders, and it's not there for the people to give us true information. It's a market stabilizer that releases. There is definitely insider trading going on. I really feel the directors should step down, and I feel that the CFTC should investigate inside there where the insider trading is taking place. This is ridiculous to bankrupt our farmers like this. Tens of thousands of farms, small farms, went out of business because of these bogus USDA reports. And that is our food supply.
And imagine,
I'll stop there before I get too irate.
No, you can get
it. Really irks me, this thing.
You can get irate if you want. It's time to be angry about this stuff because it's all real and it's all happening. David Dubois is our guest. Adapt 2030 YouTube channel. That's where the supporting evidence for the claims you're hearing. David is making claims here. The supporting evidence is on the YouTube channel for the insider trading. This is real. Going into the grand solar minimum. Catastrophic for farmers around the world and for global food production. Man-made CO2 is not warming the planet. It's not causing catastrophic climate change. Naturally occurring phenomena. Solar phenomena, which occurs in periods throughout history, which have been measured and have been recorded. And because of that, mathematicians and others have said that at the end of this coming decade, we're going to be into a very, very cold period. And it's going to last for several years. That is going to have catastrophic effects on global food production, as I've just said. And David has talked here about how our governments know all about this and are preparing for it, but are not letting you and me in on it. And this is really important. David, I wanted to ask you a question. It's going to sound stupid now in light of what we've talked about. But I would have thought that with this weather pattern, with this global cooling period definitely coming, that biotech companies like Monsanto, often referred to as Monsatan, understandably, and others, they might be about to step out of from behind the curtain like a magician to say, here is a new seed that will grow and will thrive in freezing conditions. I was going to ask you, why haven't they done that? And then it occurred to me, if they do it now, of course, it's going to give the game away. Is that the answer?
Well, they already have those seeds.
Do they?
And they've been unveiled. Yeah, it's been unveiled down in Argentina, what they're called a stress-resistant crops.
Well, that's abiotic stress. Is that not? Because I know they've got a seed for abiotic stress, which is soil that basically has no nutrients in it. Is that a different thing, or is it the same? You know, as freezing temperatures, because they have this abiotic stress seed, which we've known about, and that kind of pissed me off as well, because I'm like, well, they, you know, maybe other things are going on to render soil ungrowable, for want of a better word, and all of a sudden Monsanto says, here's the seed. I was wondering about a seed that might grow in freezing conditions, or is it the same thing?
Well, that's right. This one variety of stress-resistant crop is genetically modified to resist aluminum-heavy soils along with cold, moist conditions. So they put these two constituents or strains inside each other to make this super seed for Argentina that they're using this year. And you know what's interesting is because they're doing that, the Argentinian crop is down. So maybe that seed's not working as well as it's supposed to because they had a little less rain than they thought they were going to get. So not sure exactly what's happening there, but Argentinian production is down and continue to drop next year. So is their super seed working? They had planted for moist, wet, cold soils with aluminum resistance. But, you know, the Argentinian grow conditions now are a little bit cooler and drier. So maybe the seeds has to be actually in that moist condition for it to activate or really grow well. So if it puts into the dry condition, it's not going to get the yield they were looking at. So something biotech has gone wrong in Argentina this year. So that's why the USDA was calling all these magic super giant numbers coming out of Argentina, because they were using that new seed variety down there. But the weather didn't pan out the way it was supposed to. So you tell me, I'm not sure. I'm just along for the ride too, trying to figure out the information, because it's startling.
It's a good answer.
With our food supply.
It's a good answer, and it's an honest answer. The food supply going to be hit drastically. Give our listeners a flavor of, because some of our listeners are very new to this information, and they're very concerned about what the conditions will be like okay, it's obviously going to be devastating for food, and we'll come back to that. It's hugely important. But they're worried about themselves and older people. I mean, how cold do we think, David, it might get in the early 2030s? What sort of average temperatures are we looking at? Is it going to be unbearably cold? Will we have kind of Arctic type conditions in the UK? What is it going to look like?
Well, for the UK, you have a perfect blueprint of what has already occurred in history. So what you're looking at is something called the Maunder Minimum that occurred from, say, 1640 to 1710. Now, some of these same rivers obviously are not going to freeze because they've been dredged. It's not about it's going to get so brutally cold that we can't throw another coat on for us in our modern age with all these fabrics we have and all this high tech. We got good windows, better insulation, all these things they did not have in the 17th century. So again, the outcome is going to be different. But one thing that's going to play out exactly the same is the shrinking of the amount of time that you can grow something.
You can grow food.
I mean, look at the potatoes this year, and not only the UK, but over in Europe, they're 30% smaller. And take a look at the wheat reduction in the UK. And you know, Australia also became a net wheat importer this year, because they're in a mega drought that's supposed to last for 4 more years. They can't really grow either. But again, that matches right up with what happened in accounts of the Aboriginals in the Maunder Minimum when they had records going back. So we can forecast out based on the past. And again, one of the main thing that was talked about so highly was you're going to need to grow your own food to supplement what might not be available in the supermarket. See, this is a great thing because any of us can sprout a seed. Any of us can grow a plant. So it's not an undoable or a Mount Everest that we need to climb for this. It's just a little bit of awareness and then you putting some action behind that awareness. You know, when I went home, we prepped up, you know, several hundred pounds of food for long-term food storage. Here I do sprouts. I have an outdoor garden with vertical tubes that I grow. We're trying to bring it indoors this winter to see how it'll do indoor. But growing your own food, you know, these are simple measures.
Can I jump
in
there, David?
There's going to be a lot of opportunity in here. Vertical agriculture indoors where it's going to move. You know, how are you going to protect your food as well?
I was just going to say that.
You know, community gardens.
Yeah. You know, you took the words out of my mouth. I was going to ask you, how are you preparing for it? And then you told me. And the next question in my mind was, are you going to have a gun? Because if the global food production drops to levels that you think it will, and I think you've got a very, you know, I think you're on the money, well, people are going to want food. It's going to drive people crazy. People are going to be stealing food. And you'll need a gun as well as growing food in your house. And I don't want to sound sensational, but I'm guessing you'll need to protect yourself, won't you?
Yeah, be sensational. And one gun's not enough. You should have 4 or 5, one for each family member. Plus, guns are useless without the ammo inside. But you have to be really safe with it. You know, you need to take the safety courses. You need to know how to use those sidearms or long barrels, whatever you're going to use. You need to know it, how to clean it, how to protect it, and be very safe with it. How to aim that thing and how to shoot it correctly. It's not like you're going to be in some Rambo movie just blasting off rounds everywhere.
Yeah.
If it gets to that point, your ammo is going to be so valuable that you will be able to trade it for food. You know, and I go back to this one account of, it's called A Year in Hell, and I encourage everybody, please read this account of the Bosnian War, of what they went through and what were the most valuable items. Bleach and ammonia were among the top items that people needed for health. So a gallon of bleach, oh, it would have saved thousands of lives because people would get a cut on their finger and it would get infected. They would lose their arm. They would get gangrene over a single cut on the fingers that they couldn't disinfect. So hygiene is going to be a number one priority. So again, when you're starting to think about growing your own food, why don't you take the next step to start thinking about your hygiene? Because when things go down, people aren't going to be disposing of their waste properly. And this is where a lot of waterborne bacteria and things come in. What about purifying your own water? And the thing, year in hell, again, you know, the water, the streams were running super clean, the rivers were clean, but within 3 days or let's say a week, the water was so unusable because that's where people were going to the bathroom and throwing it. So the water collection out of that river ceased. So then people were starting to think about, well, where am I going to get my water now? Because all the pipes got turned off. It was truly, you got to read the accounts. I don't want to be there in my mind. I don't think that way in my mind. I think about rising above, vibrationally above all this chaos where, and I'm preparing in advance for these so I could survive through this time. And anybody can do it. If you go to the store and you have an extra 5 or 10 pound, why don't you look at some rice? I mean, you can get a full 25 pound bag of rice for like what? And in the United States, it's $8. Or what about canned beans? How about tuna fish or any kind of sardines, anything in a can that you can keep for a long time? What about beans? Those are super cheap and you can sprout them. So if you can't actually grow it because it's too cold, you can sprout it in your house and have fresh sprouts that are incredibly dense in micronutrients. But that 25-pound bag of beans in the United States cost me $6 for 25-pound of pinto beans. So think about that. If you have a few extra bucks and you're walking out in the store, buy some salt. Another one. Salt is a huge commodity during these times. Bleach. Go get an extra gallon of bleach if you have a few extra pounds on you. They don't really sell ammonia anymore in the United States because these issues with whatever. But bleach is still readily available. Handy wipes are still readily available. Toilet paper is still readily available. Garbage plastic bags are still readily available. You can use those as a toilet if you have a 5-gallon bucket. Like 5-gallon buckets, you can go to anywhere and they'll probably give them to you if it's at a store and they have too many of them. People give this stuff away all the time. It's like, get it away. We don't want to pay the recycle fee, so just come and take it for free. Like, you can get a lot of things if you really know what you're looking for, and it's all available now. There's no struggle to get it now, but I assure you, in 2 years, it will be a struggle to get many of these items. And I'm just going to leave it at that. You can prepare and you can be miles ahead of everybody. You still have a little time here.
You're talking about the possibility of, like, total social collapse. And I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, Jesus, this is very possible. I also think that because of the evolution of us as people, we have become dependent on others and to do things for us that we used to be able to do maybe two or three generations prior. You know, we used to be able to build, to fix things, to organize things at home. Now, and I'm very guilty of this, David, I find myself needing to get a man in, a contractor, to do something that I know my grandfather would have been able to do because it was knowledge handed down. This technological age of advancement, which I don't really believe is advancing us very much, we're not able to do things. We certainly have, most of us have no idea how to go about growing things, how to tend a crop, even if it's only a small potato crop. We're really not ready for any of this. And like you're saying, governments are going along with the CO2 climate change bullshit, which it is, while you believe they know that we're heading for the Maunder minimum, the grand solar minimum, which is going to really affect global food production and will lead to chaos. I have no doubt about that. Maybe will lead to war. Maybe will lead to a total breakdown of the social fabric. And I just don't think people are ready for it. I mean, you talk about stockpiling stuff, and that sounds pretty common sense to me. But all the other things you might need to do, you know, all the maintenance, all that sort of stuff. I think people are in a bad place, David. Do you think I mean very pessimistic? Do I have a downer on people? Because I don't see people being able to do the things that our granddads used to be able to do. Ordinary things. What do you think?
Well, I think we can learn those skills again, you know. Yeah. And here in Asia, people do community gardens on the weekend where, you know, there's a lot that's waiting to be built on. And they know it's going to be, let's say, 2 years until they're going to put a building out there. Well, the neighborhood community will take over that lot. Instead of leaving it a bare dirt thing or just field, they will take it over and they will grow vegetables inside there as a community. And people come down on the weekend and they work and they learn new skills. And another thing, after you have an enormous amount of vegetables, you have no idea how much 2 acres will put out for you. I mean, you're talking thousands and thousands of pounds of produce coming out of there. How are you going to store it? You know, most of us have lost the ability to can foods, because I know my grandparents canned everything. Yeah, we even had a root cellar. Yeah. And your grandparents, too. They canned everything. But, you know, this is a skill we'll have to learn. Like, how fun would that be, getting together, having a couple pints, learning how to can stuff up out of your garden that you grew yourself? And then the community aspect of that, so you really know people's skills. And then while you're at the community garden, you can trade skills. Literally, you know how to do this. So maybe somebody knows how to repair something, and then you have a better skill set that they don't have. And then it's a way to interact with people to find out the skill sets that people do have, because it's a cohesive amount of people. You're going to get far more skills in there that can overlap and fill in the gaps at the same time of tending food. And then you kind of understand who you can really trust, or who can learn fast, or who does have the skills already, because you want the food growers, you know, right there, right at the time. So if anybody has 30 years skill of growing food in a garden, you rock in day one, you're definitely going to want to stay with those people and learn as much as you can. And if you do ask the questions, they're quite willing to talk to you and learn. And it's a learning process for all of us, because the system has gotten us onto the system. They've pretty much made us, and I'm going to say the media and corporate conglomerates, et cetera, made you forget what our grandparents did, and they've only gotten you well. Food only comes from a supermarket. Oh, the food I grow is not going to be too clean because there might have been a squirrel on it. Oh, a bird pooped on it. I don't want to get that. Ew, that's dirty food. Clean supermarket food's clean food because we had the USDA inspected. It's so much cleaner than what I can grow in my garden where there's insects and bird poop and squirrels. Wash it and cook it. Okay, maybe. But anyway, we can relearn everything we need to learn. And it could be really fun in a community environment. And I think this is how most people are going to move forward, is in a community-esque type environment. You're not going to do it by yourself, for sure not.
It might be no bad thing for humanity, this, because we're not in a great place at the moment. Adapt 2030 is the YouTube channel for David Dubois. And you can find David at oilseedcrops.org. We've been talking about, we've still got a few minutes, we've been talking about the coming grand solar minimum. You see, the media and climate groups and journalists and everybody wants us to believe that we are creating too much CO2 and that is going to warm the planet and cause catastrophe. That isn't true. What's actually coming, and I do believe this, I believe David is right, and Valentina Zharkova and others, we're going to hit a very cold snap period for a number of years, beginning in the mid part or the latter part of the next decade. That's going to have a profound effect on global food production, and it's going to mean a lot of changes for people. It might mean chaos. It might mean very, very difficult times. David has talked in his videos and on his website about how he believes the global cabal, governments, European Union, they know all this stuff, but they're keeping this hidden from people. And David believes that the evidence is already there because crop yield has been and is on the decline. Really important, this stuff. This is hugely important, this particular subject, oilseedcrops.org. It sounds to me, though, despite all of this, particularly there in the last couple of minutes, you are optimistic about the better part of human nature. You think we'll get through it, David. We won't all kill one another, and it won't become Mad Max beyond Thunderdome, but that we might become better because of it. People might become better.
Yes and no. But first thing, let me respond to the Extinction Rebellion. You know, where are your solutions? Yeah. I've written a book on solutions. I've written a book to explain the problem. Half the book's explaining the problem. The other half is for solutions. Extinction Rebellion, where are your solutions? All you do is spout end of the world with no solutions. Why are those people dancing in the street, getting on the tops of the trains? I watched that funny video where they ripped me down. They're like, why? I'm such a social justice warrior. Yeah, yeah. How dare you rip me down from the train?
Get off that train.
Come on. Why don't you have all those people go plant trees? Because if you're so worried about CO2, have them go plant trees. And each person could probably plant, you know, 10 trees on a weekend. So imagine all these millions of people across the world could have planted 100 million trees already. And then, you know, taking care of those trees and learn how to grow some food next to the trees as a shade cover crop or something, instead of just dancing on the streets and belly aching the whole way into existence. Where are your solutions? This is insane that they talk all this problem, but not a single solution. Go clean the ocean. I don't like plastics either. Plastics is a massive problem, but nobody talks about that. And then to the last point here, 5G, this fifth generation internet, you know, this 5G and John Kitson, Mark Steele, Sasha Stone, Ian Crane, all of the activists and many more over in the UK talking about this 5G. And when I spoke at Ian Crane's Alternative View 10, I was unaware pretty much of 5G because in America, we are just not told what this tech is. And then, you know, once learning about it, the light bulb went on and go, oh, that's it. That's how they're going to do massive crowd control in the cities. Because Mark Steele explained that they can put a carrier wave inside the base frequency that has what the same kind of wave that they use on those dishes on top of Humvees for crowd control, that can ride inside the anywhere from 2 gigahertz to 37 gigahertz wave base frequency that 5G is running on, that they can actually take entire parts of a city in a grid and do the same thing with crowd control and a frequency from a laptop behind somewhere. They won't even need troops to do it, because you got to realize, you know, they're not going to be enough troops to control the, let's say bottom 10% of earners on any country. I don't care what country you go to. If they can't eat and their food assistance is not enough to cover the basics, you know, some of the food price rises in the modern minimum were 4X up to 7X for the food price increases. Can you imagine if your food rose seven times? What would you do?
Oh, I'm
you
finished.
And me.
Finished.
Yeah, like what are the lower earners going to do? I mean, they're going to go on the streets because they can't eat. Now, 10% of a country, you're going to have to control that. That's a lot of people, but they're not enough police. You're going to have to think of a different way. So 5G crowd control frequency works for me. And I think that's really the reason that the 2023 date for the installation of 5G in the United States, Canada, the EU, UK, Australia, everything needs to be 2023. Why is that date the same date that we all predict the massive crop losses across the planet to hit for sure? The first famines begin in 2023.
Isn't that amazing now? Because that's right. I've been reading your site and watching your videos. That's right. You say that the first big hit will be in 2023, and it does coincide with 5G. John and his group in Totnes and Devon, it was a wonderful bit of success getting the moratorium on 5G, but the government has countered that by instructing local authorities not to agree to any of these moratoriums. This is really scary stuff, of course, as well. You have been listening to David Dubois, oilseedcrops.org, and it's Adapt 2030 on YouTube. We're only a couple of minutes away from running out of time, but I'm really glad that you're on to this, David. You're a fantastic presenter, by the way. You present it in a stark, realistic way. There's not a lot of hyperbole, which is there isn't any, which is terrific. It's fact based, all of this, and we've got it coming. It's amazing. While people are being told, you know, the seas will rise, it's going to be too warm, and all the rest of it, this is nonsense. What's really coming is this global cooling period. I believe it's inevitable. You know, before I heard about the Grand Solar Minimum and all the rest of it, I had been following people like Ian Plimer and others who said that we are still coming out of an ice age and that there would still be cooling periods. And I didn't understand that, but I do understand it now. It's terrifically put together information. Do you get much resistance, David, just before we finish? I mean, because you're, you know, very matter of fact about it, because you're down to earth about it, because you've had your own journey, do you find much resistance to it? You know, in terms of trying to talk about it, travelling, speaking to people about it, do you find much resistance from the climate change brigade?
Yeah, so now they've organized trolls to come as a troll army to spam boards and try to dissuade the message, you know. I don't really want to talk about that too much because I don't want to manifest out there. But there is the closer you get to the target, the heavier the flak gets. And the professionals well above me, like 50X above me, are like, you're going to go this route. You better mentally prepare for it because you're already in it. And speaking of that, everything, if you listen to this point in the conversation, thank you so much for your time. And I don't want you to believe what I'm saying at all. I really don't. I would like you or Richie as well, you know, what we're talking about today, please do your own research. It's not about me trying to convince you or convert you. It's about me saying, here's my fact. There's their fact at Extinction Rebellion. I would like you to do your own research and compare with your own open mind what I've said and what facts I've presented comparatively to what they're talking about with runaway this or that. Do your own research. Don't believe me. I don't want you to believe a thing I said today. I want you to try to disprove every fact that I gave today. See, that's a better way to look at it. Try to disprove every fact I gave today, and you will be down a rabbit hole, and by the time you come out the backside, you'll be like, oh, why isn't anybody warning us about this?
That's a brilliant way to end it today, David. Thanks for staying up for us. You said you've been a jet lag and you're a late owl or a late night worker anyway. I mean, I am myself, but not as late as you. I do appreciate that. It was a favour of you to do that, and I want to just mention again before we run out of time, it's Adapt 2030. If you look for it on YouTube, I will put a link on my Twitter account, and it's oilseedcrops.org. This is real. It's not conspiracy theory. It's not hyperbole. It's not doom mongering. It's coming, this. Academics like Valentina Zharkova, people like Piers Corbyn, who's been on this program, they can see this coming. They know it's coming. The government knows it's happening, but they don't want you to know. Thanks to David Dubois and others for raising the alarm on this issue. David, thanks very much. You're welcome back anytime. There will be opportunities, of course, for you to come back, because this is a story that's developing all the time. And when things are happening, you're always welcome back here, my friend. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thank you. And I'll get up at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. to do a show. It's a 24-hour world, and any time is a good time.
You're a gentleman, David. Thanks so much. David Dubois speaking to us live from Asia on The Richie Allen Show today. Adapt 2030 on YouTube, and the website is oilseedcrops.org. Thanks so much again to David. And John Kitson put me on to David. He said, you want to check this guy out? And I did, and great value, really important stuff. And what's going on there? Wires falling out. There's wires falling out, I tells you. Yeah, not any. I just put it back in. Right, that's about it for the programme. Not much time left today. Thanks to David again. And a big Shout out to Eric Gajewski, Eric Gajewski, that's right, for coming on in the first hour. Lots going on with Brexit, right? Lots going on with Brexit. We'll see what happens over the next couple of days. I am due to be back with you on Sunday morning at 11 o'clock UK time for Sunday View. Now, if some strange things happen before then, I'll give you some notice and I might jump back on the air. We'll see. The big news today was the European Union and the United Kingdom agreed a deal, a Brexit deal, a withdrawal agreement, they agreed. But it isn't Brexit, by any stretch of the imagination. It's a massive betrayal of the British people, and it's being dressed up as a Brexit by Boris Johnson. Now, it's supposed to be signed off today by the European 27 members. They're supposed to agree with it, right? And if they do, hang on a second, let's see. Let's see, have they done it? Has the European 27 agreed on it? I don't think they have yet, but they're expected to, probably tomorrow. It'll be put to Parliament on Saturday. That's when it will get very interesting. And we'll see if something happens. We'll see. We might be talking before Sunday. We might not. We'll see how it goes. That's about it then for today. Have a fantastic weekend. It's been a good week of radio programmes. Thank you to everybody who supports this programme financially. Thank you. If you have supported it in the last week or so, thank you. I will get to you eventually with an email. Don't think I won't. It means the absolute world to me. I can't tell you how much it does. It's important that you know that I do really appreciate it. The programme will never be put behind a paywall, ever. You'll never have to pay for it. But I do hope that you'll continue to throw a couple of quid towards the programme when you can, because that ultimately pays for it. But I'll never demand that it is paid for by putting it behind a paywall. You get what I'm saying? To support it, go to richieallen.co.uk. The bank details and the PayPal details are there. Have a terrific weekend. Look after yourselves and one another. Leaving you with the Beach Boys today. Bye-bye.